Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent, and I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Over the past 10 years, there's been an increasing interest by some for more freedom and simplicity in living. For some, it's been a desire to get out from under debt of housing that consumes the majority of individual income and offload stuff in an effort to reduce individual footprints. While tiny homes aren't for everyone, they have the potential to provide affordable housing solutions for certain segments of the population. Whether it be temporary housing for homeless individual, a permanent residence for someone looking to simplify their lifestyle, or as an accessory unit to a primary residence, tiny homes can provide an attractive solution. While these tiny homes have sparked a big trend, many municipalities have been unprepared for them from a code perspective, resulting in challenges for would-be owners, builders, and city officials alike. Our topic today is tiny living in San Luis County. My guests are Michael Codron, City of San Luis Obispo Community Development Director, and Becky Jorgensen joins us from Hope's Village of SLO. Today's show is live, and we invite you to also join our conversation with your comments or questions, and you can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Once again, that's 781-3875. And I want to welcome Michael and Becky.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. Becky, you've been on this trail of tiny homes locally here for quite a while. So I'm going to go ahead and start with you. If you can kind of give an overview about how you got involved and kind of how you've evolved to where you are now.
Okay, thanks for having us first. And I got involved because years ago I worked at Sunny Acres with Dan Duvall. And I learned that people just need a little support. They need, first of all, housing, but more important, they need community. So I decided to go out and found my own nonprofit, our nonprofit, Hope's Village. We've been in existence for 5 years. We are searching for a 5-acre plot of land that would be a viable site for a sustainable community village. We can get about 50 more people off the streets of SLO with 30 tiny homes. We've already built one tiny home. It's on Los Osos Valley Road. If you ever go out that road, I'm sure you've seen it. It's right by the church. We're looking for either a donation of land or a long-term inexpensive lease, because the whole purpose of building this village is, number one, to help people, but number two, to establish a model that the rest of the county and the state and the nation can look upon as a viable way to house more of our homeless people, because it's not rocket science. People want to help, and we're giving them the avenue in which to do so.
So when you talk about Sunny Acres, for those people that aren't familiar with Sunny Acres and maybe moved here locally, more recently, Sunny Acres was a privately owned parcel that an individual was allowing other people that didn't have a home site to utilize and live on. And that got into some problems with county ordinances and zoning and those sorts of things. And he was more or less forced to abolish that.
No, he's very much still going on. He's built a 14-bedroom. He will get it.
Okay.
He will get it.
Is it still operational now?
Absolutely.
No, not yet.
Never stopped. I mean, Dan Duvall has a huge heart, a huge heart. And for some of us who are homeless advocates, we are much more interested in helping the homeless than politics. And when the codes are difficult, sometimes there's a saying, you know, act now, ask for forgiveness later. Mm-hmm. And that's what Dan did. His whole idea was to help the homeless.
Right. So this is something that you got involved in as a means of looking for sheltering individuals that were without a home.
Kind of.
Okay.
Yes, kind of. I learned my love of homeless people and individuals who just need a hand up. They just need a second chance in life. Many have been incarcerated. They're on parole. Dan's is a clean and sober living program. So will ours be. Ours will be much more of a democracy. You know, everybody's voice will be heard. Everyone will have a vote in the matter. Everyone will work. You know, there's going to be no time to sit around smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee, but everyone will have a job. Even if they're disabled, if someone's sitting in a wheelchair, they can water the garden.
In Hope's Village, then, is the concept that the individuals would own those homes, that those...
No. We thought about that, but right now we're going to have a program fee. Everyone will pay a certain percentage of their income. Say I've got one veteran living out there with $135 a month. He gets no benefits. It's a long story. I've got another veteran living out there who makes $900 a month. So the two of them will kind of balance each other out. So there will be a program fee. Their little tiny homes will be built by them and community volunteers.
Okay.
So no rent involved.
There's no rent involved.
No rent involved. We call it a program fee because we don't want the landlord-tenant situation. It's just too hard.
Okay. And then after you were to secure this land, then you would be able to move forward. But there are zoning ordinances and being able to establish a tiny village, if you will,
right,
on land also, correct?
Right. And Michael can speak to that better than me. But I know that... Mayor Harmon has it on the agenda now to look for ways to change the zoning to include tiny homes, right?
That is correct. There is currently going on a update to the City of San Luis Obispo's zoning regulations, whereby tiny houses are one of the things that we're going to be looking at in terms of how the regulations apply in order for us to accomplish more production of housing of all types. So the City of San Luis Obispo has a major city goal, part of its financial planning process. Over the next 2 years, we are very focused on housing production. It's production of housing of all types. And tiny homes is part of that. And tiny homes really mean different things to different people. You mentioned that previously, Becky. But tiny homes... can be like a recreational vehicle on wheels. They can be stick-built, just a small home on a foundation. Typically, in terms of the size of those things, we're talking about 150 to 450 square feet.
That's the definition of a tiny home within that scale.
Yeah, that's one way certainly to understand tiny. The tiny aspect of it can go down to as small as 150 square feet, which would be an efficiency unit, which is something that is actually defined by the state. At 150 square feet, you would not have the ability to have restroom facilities or cooking facilities within that space. But they are the kinds of units that you could see where you had shared facilities. You could also see those as like an accessory dwelling unit. So if you had a primary residence with an efficiency unit, the person who's living in the efficiency unit would have access to the facilities in the main residence. So different ways to produce housing in that manner.
And in the lead-in, I was talking about the different kinds of situations that people have. Talk about, Michael, a little bit about some of the reasons that you're seeing in this county that there's been increasing interest, not only for a solution to homelessness. Becky's been at this for years now, correct?
Yes.
With Hope Village SLO. But there's also been movement and interest from other individuals for homes that are considered in that tiny home arena for other things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can. California is clearly in the midst of a housing crisis. By some estimates, there are 1 million to 2 million homes that we need right now that we don't have. California is a wonderful place to live and to be, and so there is a lot of demand. And the supply, we could never probably produce enough housing supply for the number of people that would want to live here, particularly coastal California, which has some of the least affordable housing markets in the country. So beyond the L.A., San Diego, San Francisco areas where you have big disparities in incomes and in affordability of housing, it's also the case for Santa Cruz, Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and other communities that there is a growing need for housing for a wider variety of people. And for some, tiny homes are thought to be a solution to that. For some people, it is about a lifestyle choice and wanting to simplify and live with a smaller footprint. And for others, it's just an absolute need to have shelter, to have a roof over your head.
And something that's affordable.
Correct.
Something that you can get into.
Right. But it's interesting that you say that, because just by being small is not going to mean that it is affordable.
Explain that.
Sure. In this location, in San Luis Obispo, the only truly affordable housing is housing that has some type of deed restriction or government restriction on it that enables a person of a particular income type to occupy that home. If you just think about the housing around Cal Poly campus, for instance, you know, there are individuals who are willing to pay $800,000 per bed for a housing situation that is certainly tiny. It might be a converted garage. There could be it could just be a bedroom in a larger house shared with a number of people. But there are people that are willing to pay large amounts of money for the location, for the environment, to be in this community, and it won't be affordable even if it's tiny.
I see. Okay. So for however, for example, for an individual who has an elderly parent and that parent can no longer live in their own home alone, however, wants that independence and doesn't want a lot of stuff and doesn't need a lot of space, but wants to be part of the family, that used to be called granny units, right? And some of them had bathrooms and kitchens, and some did not.
Correct. And that has gone through quite an evolution. And it's actually very exciting, the news to report on the front of granny flats, I think.
Right.
Is one of the original terms. Then they were called secondary dwelling units. Now the state is officially calling them accessory dwelling units. The state passed a law that went into effect on January 1st that requires jurisdictions to allow by right the ability to add an accessory dwelling unit onto your single-family residence. The city of San Luis Obispo has just passed its own ordinance to enable the production of accessory dwelling units.
Does that have to be attached to the existing dwelling?
It does not need to be attached. So these could be cottages built standalone in a residential rear yard. They could be within the floor plan, within the footprint of the existing building. It could be a garage conversion. There could be even an accessory building in the back, like a shed. If it was built, you know, stout enough, you could get a permit to convert that to become an accessory dwelling unit. And in fact, there are really significant incentives to convert an existing building into an accessory dwelling unit as opposed to building a brand new structure. The state has made it so that certain fees cannot be charged if you're converting existing space, to the point where the cost to create an accessory dwelling unit within an existing residence or in an existing building is about $1,500 to come in and get all the permits and everything that you need to allow for you to go forward and construct one of those.
That's not bad.
Well,
that's not bad.
I will
talk into. I know.
I will distinguish that from if you were to build a distinct, like, standalone building, those fees are going to go up to about $12,000 to $13,000.
Right.
And that's just the fees to construct.
For the
it.
Same kind of construction.
Correct.
If it's not considered an accessory.
Correct.
Okay.
I have a question. What about if you brought in a little cabin on wheels and put it in someone's backyard and it was already built and it's licensed by the DMV? Would that be considered an accessory unit?
So that's a great question, and that's actually the exact discussion that we are having as part of our zoning regulations update. And I thought maybe this sounds like a good moment to just...
Well, we're going to be... Yeah, if you would go ahead and pitch that, because I want you to mention it a couple of times.
Okay, yeah. Thanks. Yeah. The city is having a workshop on Saturday from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock at the library community room in downtown San Luis Obispo. And we're actually having a special speaker, a presentation at 11:30, and it's Teresa Baker from the Tiny Houses Association. And Teresa is the California co-chapter lead of that association and brings a lot of experience and a wealth of knowledge on the topic. So she'll be able to answer more detailed questions that community members might have about that. But the workshop, it's actually an open house. People can drop in anytime from 10 to 2 and learn about the zoning regulations update and what we're working on. But tiny houses is part of that.
Yay. Yeah. That's huge. That's
and
great.
You're taking feedback from this workshop too, input from the community about what they're looking for, what they hope to see.
That's
correct.
Yes.
And what the needs are.
We are.
Yeah. And the, you know, the changes that the city is making, is the city looking at how they're going to construct this and what they're going to do with tiny homes and zoning for that? And is that kind of all in play at this point?
Yes, we are. And to go back to Becky's question about a tiny house on wheels
right.
in somebody's backyard, a big part of this effort of updating our zoning regulations is applying the correct definitions to the different types of tiny homes so that there's a clear path for somebody that wants to build a tiny home on their property of how to accomplish that. Right now, the way the city's laws apply is that something that is licensed by the DMV and on wheels is considered a recreational vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
In the city of San Luis Obispo, you actually can park and occupy a recreational vehicle on a residential property for 72 hours, after which time you would have to move the vehicle and stop using it as a residence. RVs aren't intended to be permanent residences, and so because of sanitation reasons and other reasons relative to how neighborhoods are developed, there's that limitation. But actually, I did some research in some other communities in terms of City of Santa Barbara, Santa Barbara County, and then going up Lompoc, Santa Maria, Hollister, Gilroy, Monterey, none of those communities allow occupancy of RVs. And we asked them about tiny houses as well and tried to, you know, see if there was anything that those
no
communities
had done.
There's no
differentiation between those two.
There isn't. And
okay.
And there aren't any special regulations in those communities for tiny houses yet either. But it's something that we always learn from each other in different communities, mm-hmm. particularly on the Central Coast. So if somebody's doing something, we want to know about it and vice versa. So we'll be continuing to engage with different communities around the area.
Fantastic.
I'd like to comment on that. Santa Barbara has contacted us, and they want to know about our tiny homes. And also, there are estimated to be at least 500,000 full-time RVers. They're called snowbirds.
Yes.
Right? Mm. They travel from the north where it's cold to the south. And I see big, huge diesel RVs, motorhomes parked in the city all night. You know they're in there because their little blinds are shut. And I think if we don't start working on this very quickly, it's going to be a lot worse than it is, because I read statistics the other day that a third to a half of the people in this country are 1 month away from being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty frightening. And I also want to say, differentiate the idea of just tiny homes to tiny villages, what we are suggesting, because the majority of people who are living on the streets and they've been chronically homeless, 1 in 4 are veterans. many veterans have many horrible issues, PTSD, panic attacks, anxiety. We have a couple that come to our meeting and they sit in the far end of the sanctuary and they won't speak unless, you know, I can really draw them out. They don't want to live in somebody's backyard. They can't live in a house or an apartment building. So that's the reason we're getting this little tiny village together, and they're doing it all over the country. We are slow on the uptake, but I'm very encouraged by our new mayor and our planning department and community development. They're really taking the ball. They're taking the ball and running with it.
It's good to hear. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Radio, supported radio for the Central Coast from Monterey to Ventura County. If you just joined us, today's show is about tiny living in San Luis County and a discussion about the growing interest across the country about tiny homes as a solution to housing challenges and issues, including those that we have right here. My guests today are Michael Codron, City of San Luis Obispo Community Development Director, and Becky Jorgensen, who's with Hope's Village of SLO. Your voice can be a part of today's conversation, and this show is live. We're taking calls at 781-3875, and we're going to go to a call right now with Stephen. Stephen, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi.
Thank you. Hi. Michael and Becky know me. My name's Steve Leffler. I'm with Modular Lifestyles in Newport Pacific, and we run mobile home parks and RV resorts and apartments throughout the country. But we are excited to be on this radio show because we have just closed escrow, and we're going to work on a trailer park or an RV resort in downtown SLO, and we're going to be bringing in 150 square foot tiny house, and we're also going to be bringing in 533 square foot kind of tiny houses, but they're really, I guess you'd call them a small house given the parameters of tiny house. I'm a representative of the factory built industry, and I was part of Michael and Mayor Harmon's initiative to get the ADU, and I showed them some of the ADUs I've built in Newport Beach and some other locations throughout the state. And so I'm very familiar with the ADU law for backyard homes. And one of the things Michael didn't mention, which is kind of interesting, these backyard homes will require not new electrical service or gas service, but you have to use the existing the existing home. So that's something that, Michael, you might want to touch on. That's kind of a difficult thing to do, but unless you do battery-operated solar-powered homes, which is what I do, then you can get away with it because you're not using a lot of the electricity or the gas from the existing homeowner. So that's something that, Michael, you might want to touch on. But I don't know if you addressed that in your ordinance. I know you've mentioned it.
No, do you want to expound on that, Michael?
Sure. I mean, what I want to say about that is that anytime that you're adding new floor area or an additional unit to a piece of property, there are complexities associated with that. The size of your existing electrical panel, for instance,
right. If
it can't accommodate the new circuits, is something that you need to investigate early on when you're planning to add something like this to your property.
Yeah, it's not just put it up, put it in. You need to really do the planning around it, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Tell me
a little bit. That was a very good comment, Michael, because a lot of people might think they can just put them in, and that's an issue that most people with little tiny houses have to deal with, because where are they going to get the power to run the lights, the stove, the whatever appliances? In addition to that, our little project in downtown SLO, we're kind of excited about it because most of the homes there existing are travel trailers, and we're going to make them into two-bedroom, one-bath units, which is been a real challenge for the factories because building tiny houses is kind of a new and unique thing, and we're not using backyard builders. We have to make them to a certain code. And just so everybody understands, in the factory-built industry, an ANSI code is a registered builder who uses to build anywhere from 130 square feet to 400 square feet, and that's considered a park model in most RV resorts. And then in addition to that, above 401 to whatever can be a HUD code, which is what everybody used to call a mobile home is now called a factory-built HUD code, manufactured home, and those are the products that I'm going to be bringing in. But I am also bringing in 150 square foot ANSI coated factory built tiny house, just because we wanted to do it and we had a small enough lot to do it. But we're kind of excited to bring it to SLO because we got the property in escrow, and we're going to be doing this here.
And where is this property?
It's on 145 South, next to the Sunshine Donut, and we will be starting. It's actually a mobile home park RV resort, and so, but mainly it's travel trailers in there now.
Okay.
Your typical travel trailer that you see, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And so we're going to take those, start taking some of them out and replacing them in time with these unique kind of houses.
Are those trailers
both
now
Becky
owned?
And the other woman was mentioning trying to find some land and do tiny house villages. I recently built one in a mobile home park. We took two streets out and put in 395 square foot, two bedroom, one bath in the city of San Fernando, and they rented out real quick because they were about 40% less than the current.
Well, Steve, you mentioned something earlier that I think is important for folks to understand relative to the different types of certifications that tiny houses have to have. And the State Department of Housing and Community Development has issued some guidance on this. And I think it's an important topic because of what they're trying to accomplish. So any tiny house that is constructed, that is, you know, stick-built on a piece of property, is going to have to meet the California Building Standards Code.
Just like if it was a house.
Exactly. In the case of something that is on wheels, that is registered with the DMV and can travel on normal city streets without a special permit, there is another type of certification, the ANSI, ANSI certification that Stephen mm-hmm. mentioned, that's required. But there are a lot of different types of these dwellings, right? There are a lot of different ways that people might envision creating a tiny house. The point is that State Department of Housing and Community Development and the City of San Luis Obispo is particularly concerned with the safety of the occupants. It's very important that there be inspections and certifications to ensure that we're not creating sort of a underground market of housing that may have the benefit of increased affordability but is less safe.
So you're not looking to put up shanty towns?
Certainly not. And there are things, you know, that might appear to be really well constructed and safe to live in upon observation, but
right.
The codes are very detailed and they are the way they are because of things that we've learned in the past about how construction has failed to keep its occupants safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important, I think, to mention that the economy, the way it is, the incredible demand for housing, particularly in coastal California, creates an environment where people will live in anything, and they'll pay good money to live in an unsafe situation. And so to prevent...
We've already seen that here in this city.
I think we have.
Yeah.
And so to ensure the safety of occupants, that's one thing for listeners to know, is that some type of certification permit is going to be required regardless of what the house ends up being.
So these homes have to be insulated. There's a certain requirement for the wiring of them?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And then, the energy standards are actually one of the big cost drivers. This is all stuff that does drive the cost. Becky might want to talk about this based on her, you know, experience of actually trying to produce these dwellings.
Yes, I would.
Yeah, but everything that we're talking about in terms of the energy efficiency, the wiring standards, the requirements for detectors for carbon monoxide and smoke.
The size of the windows
the
for
the size of the windows
exiting.
For egress, exactly. Yeah. Those are all things that do drive cost.
Yeah. Yeah. Becky, do you want to talk about the cost?
Yes, I wanted to ask first, Stephen, what is the cost of one of your dwellings?
Well, we have decided, because of our experience in trying to sell we decided to go rental.
Okay, what would the rental be per month for the smallest unit?
We haven't got your this is a great question. We haven't even built them yet. I'm working on that project right now. I'm in San Diego at one of my tiny houses I'm visiting that we put in a mobile home park down here in San Diego. So I'm not at liberty to know yet, but I right now got the order to start working with the factory to design and build. So at this moment, we have construction costs that are just going to happen shortly because we have to clear out the old RVs and take care of the land because the land has some issues with it.
Are those old RVs owned by somebody?
Our company owns all the RVs in the community.
Are there people living in them?
It's been a rental community for quite some time. So we decided that the type of housing that was there was, I felt, substandard. And because of the tiny house interest and the keeping them as affordable as we can, right, we're looking at changing the model that's present mm-hmm. to something new. Mm-hmm. And like Becky was saying, we would love to assist anybody in getting land and developing because I build RV resorts and mobile home parks throughout the state, but that's another element of a lot of cost and
you know what, Stephen,
utilities and all that stuff for people. That's that can be expensive when you improve unimproved land.
Hey, Stephen, thank you for calling. Can you please keep us on your radar if you get rid of those old travel trailers? Because I could sure use them for my RV program.
Well, then give me a call. I think
all
you
right.
have my
yes,
email,
I
Becky,
do.
And I will give you a shot at getting them because we don't know what to do with them. So
I'll take them. I'll take anything you have. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, right. Stephen.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So talk about you've mentioned a couple of times that there are different kinds of homes and different kinds of requirements. Is there anything that's missing in there that you needed to expand a little bit about, or did you pretty much cover?
I think I covered it. Okay. I mean, it can get very detailed,
yeah.
But I think the most important thing for people to know is the standards that apply, or that there are standards that apply.
And do you have a sense of what the cost is? Becky, you've been looking into
yes,
tiny
ma'am.
Homes for a while.
We built a tiny home for $3,900. The reason we didn't add amenities to it is because we don't want people sitting in their tiny homes all day and all night. We just want it for like a bedroom, because then they're forced to come out and everyone's going to work in our village, but then they're forced to come out and have camaraderie and community and eat with their fellow villagers. And
so you have a centralized dining area.
Absolutely. Yeah. We will have we'll have a common house, which will look more like a big barn if I get my way.
Uh-huh.
With all these tiny homes around it, and everyone will use the common house for cooking, office work, laundry, the toilets, the loos, the showers, everything will be in the tiny house so that people will need to come there for their livelihood. What else was I going to say? $3,900. I had to go buy all new materials at Stick Built. We bought a $250 travel trailer. We sawzalled around it, yanked it off its chassis, put in a floor, built it. First, we went to the DMV and got it licensed. Then we built it. So it's a California permanent trailer. So what would that do to your ability to put it in someone's backyard?
So it would have, in order right now under the standards that have been issued by State Department of Housing and Community Development, it would have to have the specific ANSI certification in order to be able to be occupied as a dwelling.
And this is after the International Residential Code added a part for tiny homes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because that would still be
the rule
on a foundation. So the IBC, the International Building Code standards relative to tiny homes, you're still talking about a dwelling on a permanent foundation.
Okay, so what about a little trailer? It wouldn't work in the backyard to be lived in, you're saying?
No, I'm saying that the and I'm just trying to see if I can grab the actual certification that's required. It's essentially be the ANSI A119.5 and NFPA 1192 standards.
So okay, that doesn't mean anything
right,
to me.
Right, and I just thought I'd put it out there in case it does mean anything to any of the listeners. But it's about fire protection, and it's about habitability. And those are the standards that HCD is applying, that the state is applying to say that this is a safe dwelling. They still say that they're not year-round. But I feel like particularly in San Luis Obispo's climate, that there may be flexibility or options for year-round living in that type of facility. At the same time, it would have to meet those certifications right now for the city of San Luis Obispo
does
to permit anything.
Does it
like
need
that.
To have insulation?
It does not in terms of a tiny home on wheels. Again, that's like a recreational vehicle
right.
and would not require
if it's on a foundation.
Insulation. If it's on a foundation, it does require compliance with all of the energy standards, and certainly insulation is a big part of that.
Is it required to have heat?
Yes.
Okay.
Also
so it has
to have
some source of heat.
Correct.
Okay. So, and it has to have electrical?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, and probably, you know, water and sewer service, you know, sanitation, cooking, those are the most important things for habitability.
Right.
And if you're providing a fully independent living environment for somebody, it's got to have all those things. In the case of the village concept that Becky's talking about, those would be part of a shared
right.
facility.
Right. Okay. You're listening to KCBX, your public radio station, 90.1 FM, San Luis Obispo, 91.7, Salinas to Paso Robles, 89.5, Santa Barbara, and on the web at kcbx.org. My guests with local knowledge about the topic of tiny homes have joined me, and that is Michael Codron, City of San Luis Obispo Community Development Director, and Becky Jorgensen, who's with Hope's Village of SLO. Today's show is live, and you can bring your comments on air with us at 781-3875, and we're going to go to a comment now from Dan. Dan, are you there?
I am.
Hi. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes. I live in Cambria, which is an unincorporated town in San Luis Obispo County.
Uh-huh.
And I want to build a totally self-sustained house using not having to use any kind of water meter or sewage, with a composting toilet and water capture and solar power generation and everything. But even if I went to the county and got building plans, a permit, the CSD here has made it very clear they will not allow that because basically they control the growth here with the excuse of the lack of water, and they want to sell a meter. I was wondering if anybody has encountered this problem and if there is a legal avenue to get around such a problem.
Since Cambria is in an incorporated area, the county has
It's unincorporated, yes.
It's unincorporated, so the county has no jurisdiction over them, right, Michael?
No, the Cambria is an unincorporated area.
Okay, right. So they
under
do,
the
you
county
do have
jurisdiction.
And it's county
then.
Right.
And what Dan's saying is that there is a services
ordinance.
District that has standards and regulations relative to
right.
new services.
Right.
And they've used they haven't issued a water meter in 12 years.
Yes.
So. There is property available at a decent price around here because people
can't build
on them.
Right.
And I have access
funny.
To one, and I'd like to build about a 400-square-foot house, totally self-sustainable. And I've been – they won't even listen to me. They won't even take – they won't even let me present this in front of the panel.
Dan, would this be a property with an existing single-family home?
No, it's a totally raw property.
Gotcha.
How about a yurt?
Well, this would be something that would be easier to accomplish if there was an existing single-family home and you wanted to build an accessory dwelling unit to go along with that home.
Right, I understand that. Yeah. But here, this little town, because of the lack of new housing, the prices are through the roof. So
right.
For me to attempt to do that and then convert that house to a totally self-sustained house, It just is out of my budget. And again, the whole idea of tiny housing is to downgrade, and you know, so.
Right, right.
I have one more thing to say. There's a woman in Arroyo Grande, it was in the Trib a couple years ago, who was given a tiny home by her children. She has it in someone's backyard somewhere, and she lives in it all the time, just like the KOA people are allowed to rent the tiny homes in Avila every day of the year.
Right.
I don't get it.
But you're in a situation, Dan, that you need the CSD's permission for water hookup.
Well, no, or a way of getting around that, because I will not need a water hookup, because I plan to have a composting toilet and water capture and storage and solar, and so I won't need sewage or water. And I've got some wonderful plans, and which I paid for, and it would be one of the nicer houses here, to tell you the truth, although small.
Yeah, yeah. There were, you know, in some of the articles that I was reading for today's show, there were some really interesting buildings that were going on in the Fresno area and also outside of the community. Have you looked onto some of the tiny home sites of some of other areas?
Yeah, I've been pursuing this for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So this is something I really want to do. I really like this area up here in Cambria, but I was just wondering if anybody has encountered this problem and if there's a legal avenue that somebody's taken successfully and gotten around this kind of an issue.
No, I don't think so. And I would say that what you're experiencing is part of the way that communities, governments, special districts across California are dealing with what is essentially a housing market that's broken. So we have a situation where if everybody could build what they exactly what they wanted to build, in a place like Cambria, in a place like really anywhere in San Luis Obispo, you would have situations where it was not sustainable from the standpoint of water supply, from the standpoint of wastewater treatment, from the standpoint of the ability of the roads to handle the traffic that gets generated.
Right.
There are a lot of things that go into planning for a neighborhood that or a community that works. I think what you're going to find is across the country, there are a lot of places that can be laboratories for these kinds of housing experiments, or develop where you develop really a lot of knowledge about how to build more efficiently and effectively, and that ultimately you end up with a prototype or a method of construction or a method of living that can make its way into the city zoning regulations, into building code standards, and can be more widely applicable, more widely deployed. But in communities that have constrained resources, there are going to be regulations put in place to ensure that we don't outstrip the availability of water is probably a really good example. Even though we're just coming out of a drought in our area, you know, we should certainly expect that drought cycle is going to be part of our future.
Right,
as well.
And I understand all that, and believe me, I've done a lot of research on this. In all honesty, I believe their reluctance to move forward on something like this is a way of them controlling the growth in Cambria.
Absolutely.
Using the drought as an excuse. A little house that I'm thinking of will not be have any impact. Like I said, I would have water collection and water storage in the event I need water delivered. But the sewage part, the composting toilet would take care of that. I'm just wondering how to do this legally. I don't want to alienate my neighbors.
Hey, Dan, I have some ideas for you. Why don't you call me? My number's on my website.
Okay, what's your website?
HopesVillageOfSLO.com.
I'm sorry, say that again.
HopesVillageOfSLO.com.
My
name is Becky.
I will do it.
Okay, thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Bye.
And Tim, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah. Hi, guys. Hi, Michael and Becky. This
Hello,
is Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Yeah, I'm a homeless advocate and affordable housing advocate here in SLO. This is a great program. Thanks so much, you guys. I have a question for Michael. I'm just curious, because you've mentioned repeatedly about the safety of occupants. I'm just curious about the concern for the safety of the occupants of the homeless camps in our county, and mainly focused in San Luis Obispo.
Good for you, Tim.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's something that the city of San Luis Obispo works very closely with the county to connect people that we find very frequently in camps along our creeks, in different portions of city open space and in other areas, connecting them to services as best we can. We advocate for homeless services through direct financial contributions to projects like the 40 Prado Homeless Services Center, which has just broken ground this week. So very exciting project by CAPSLO to move forward with an integrated homeless shelter and day service center.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a variety of ways that the city of San Luis Obispo, our police department, for instance, has a community action team that are officers that are trained specifically to interact with homeless individuals and connect them with services in the community. And that's their job. They spend their time providing that service to the community and to these individuals. So it's something that we take very seriously. And I understand your question from the standpoint of, geez, wouldn't it be safer for an individual to be living with a roof over their head, regardless of the quality of construction, et cetera, than living in a creek? But it's a bit of a false choice. And what we'd like to do is accomplish safe housing and provide access to homeless services to all the individuals that need it. And it's an ongoing day-to-day effort.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that answer. And we all appreciate what the city has been able to do. But the question really is that enough? I don't know if you know, statistically, the national homeless groups have found that your life expectancy, if you're homeless, is dramatically shortened. And to me, that sounds like a safety issue. We count, as you know, every 2 years, we count how many homeless people in our county, and typically it's between 1,500 and 2,000. And that's a lot of people that are living in unsafe situation today, right now.
The sense of urgency is what we want. We want a sense that this is an urgent problem. This should take precedence over anything and everything. And we're not putting you on the spot, Michael. We're calling out to the city and the county to realize that this isn't going away. You can't put your blinders on. You can't have meetings about it and talk about it. There has to be a sense of urgency.
Well, however, you can have meetings to get input, which is one of the things that you're doing.
Absolutely.
This Saturday.
Yes.
Well, I'm talking about the 10-year plan to end homelessness, which mm-hmm. is now in its eighth year, and they're just now starting a shelter, which is a giant. Well, I won't say it. Never mind. Won't say it.
Well, certainly all housing.
Well, thank you, Tim.
Okay.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
I was just going to say that all housing helps contribute to the solution. And on Saturday, we are going to be meeting from 10 to 2 at the library community room to talk about our zoning regulations update, where we're going to be investigating a lot of different ways to provide additional housing opportunities for residents, including more density in our downtown area.
Fantastic. And Becky, I want to get back to you because one of the things that you did want to talk about is the Showers of Hope. You haven't really mentioned that yet, and I wanted you to kind of give an update on what's happening with that.
Yes, we are bringing in a mobile shower trailer from Illinois. It'll be a 19-footer with two units. One will be ADA compliant and the other just normal. They both have showers. They will both have toilets in them, and the shower unit will enable people to shower who have no ability to do so. They've been banned by for whatever reason, by local shelters. We're really excited about this. French Hospital has given us $25,000, We raised the other $13,000. It's going to be totally paid for today. This is also a giant humanitarian issue, the problem that a lot of people in our community don't have the access to become – to clean themselves, to become clean. And this ties in with communicable disease spreading. I mean, how can people go look for housing or a job if they haven't had a shower in a month? Mm-hmm. So we're really excited about this. If you want any information, call me up. Call Tim Wag up. Tim's been working real hard on this, and so have I. And Tim is soon to be part of the CAT team, and we know all about this. We've both been doing outreach, him a little longer than I have, but I've been out there for about a decade. And if you ever go to the creek and you see the way people live, you will want it right now, too.
And where are these going to be made available, or do you know
yet?
We
just found out today or yesterday that a church on Los Osos Valley Road is going to allow us to set up our shower there. We're hoping for one or two more churches, and then Tim and I will actually take it down to the creek.
Okay.
Tim's got 17 homeless encampments. We're going to pick the two biggest encampments and take it to the creek.
Is it self-contained with
self-contained.
Water?
Self-contained. Yeah. Self-contained.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah, we're
congratulations
really
on that.
Thank you. Real excited.
And then let's take a call from Jerry. Jerry, are you there?
This is Heidi Harmon, actually.
Oh, Heidi.
Hi.
Hi.
Are you ready?
I'm ready for you.
All right. Well, I just wanted to say that I'm just so excited to see this happening, this conversation happening, and as it impacts the homeless community and as it just impacts the community at large, there's been a really like a groundswell of interest in tiny homes in general. And I think it really shows two things that's great about the city of San Luis Obispo, and that is the citizens really have a voice here, and they have made their voice on this issue pretty clear. And then the city is really listening, and I think that Michael and others on staff have done a really good job of hearing that, and I'm excited to hear more on Saturday. And I think this is just a really positive move forward on creating some more creative and hopefully affordable ways for people to live here in the city of San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, just from listening to Michael, the willingness for some of the flexibility in terms of looking at what can be done locally, and some things may not be able to be done and some things may, but having people turn out with questions and comments like you suggested really mm-hmm. encourage people to do that.
Yeah. So thank you to everyone that's been a part of that process.
Well, thank you for calling in, Heidi.
Thanks, Heidi.
Yeah. Thanks, Mayor.
Yeah.
And Jerry, are you there?
Yeah, still here.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask Michael a question, and actually Heidi can answer it too. The city of Fresno changed its zoning
yes.
to specifically authorize RVs and park models as set, ADUs or secondary dwelling units. Has the city actually looked into their ordinance?
We have just started the process of looking into the different solutions that communities across the state and country are employing to enable tiny houses and more affordable housing in general. As I mentioned earlier, we're in the process of updating our zoning regulations. It's about a year from now. We should have a complete new set of codes. And that will be one of the conversations that we have in terms of can a certified RV be used as a permanent dwelling?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to interject something right here. When you talked about Fresno, I hate to be the bad guy, but I know too much. I've seen too much. And I'm wondering if Fresno all of a sudden got this going because they had a $1.2 million loss from a homeless class action lawsuit. So, you know, I would hate to see that here. And I don't mean to bring it up or make a threat, but, man, we've just got to get going on this. And if these new zonings are going to be available in a year...
Correct. That's how long it takes.
That's not how long it takes, but that's another decision, another conversation.
Well, the current codes have been in effect for about 20 years, and we do update them every year, but this is a major update, and we want something that's going to last.
Are the various cities looking at this also? I mean, this is the city of San Luis Obispo, so is the county looking at this from a county perspective?
Yes.
Are the other cities, north and south, mm-hmm. also looking at this, and do you come together to discuss what you would maybe come up with in common?
We do. Planning directors from across the county get together on a regular basis and have conversations on topics like this. We have a meeting coming up, and this might be something that we could put on the agenda for a conversation. There's been a lot of leadership in the city of San Luis Obispo to further the discussion and to make sure that we understand what the possibilities are, what some of the challenges are, and that we give our decision makers the opportunity to consider those things and make the decision that's best for the community of San Luis Obispo, listening to the residents, listening to advocates, and having a range of choices for how we might go forward with permitting tiny houses. And so that is a process that takes some time. San Luis Obispo, the one thing in particular that we are good at is process. We have these processes that ensure that we really understand where the community is at on any given issue so that decision makers have the best ability to make a good decision in the moment, in that moment of time when they're asked, you know, do you want to go in this direction or not? Mm-hmm. And so that's the task that's been given to me and to my department, is particularly on tiny houses, is to assess what the opportunities and options are and to make our best recommendation to our Planning Commission and City Council.
And Becky, you mentioned that you're still looking for land. Are you actually looking in San Luis Obispo, or you're looking in unincorporated areas?
We're looking all over the county. If we wanted to go to Atascadero, they are incorporated. So they do not have the rule. They're not under the thumb of the county. If we went up to Atascadero, it would probably be easier for us, but the majority of homeless people live in or around San Luis. I just lost my thought. Oh, the mayors also meet once a mm-hmm. month, and I had the opportunity to meet and talk with them at the last meeting, and I believe they're all on board with tiny homes. And I know it's scary. It's not a money-making endeavor. It's the man who called in tried very hard and long to get Hope's Village to buy into his plan to build tiny homes. But these are for people that have no money. They have no housing, because there really is no affordable housing in San Luis, Michael. There is none.
It's
affordable housing.
Appeal to you, Michael.
I know it's not your problem, but affordable housing is something you can afford. If you're living in subsidized housing and you're paying a third of the month's rent and the taxpayers are paying the other two-thirds, that's not affordable housing. So we're looking at building homes for people with little or no money.
I encourage you to show up on Saturday. And it's where again, Michael?
It's at the Library Community Room in San Luis Obispo.
At 11 o'clock, from 11 to 2.
It's, okay. Right. The event is from 10 to 2, and at 11:30, we will have a special presentation on tiny houses.
All right. Fantastic. I want to thank my guests today, Michael Codron, City of San Luis Obispo Community Development Director, Becky Jorgensen, Hope's Village of SLO. Next week, join Fred Monroe. He'll be talking with the Food Coalition, and they'll be focusing on Hunger Awareness Day to alleviate hunger for 46,000 residents of SLO County who are food insecure. We always appreciate your suggestions for future shows. This show has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices. Thank you.
Thank you.